forecast sponsored this hour by Galmish and Sons. Increasing clouds tonight, overnight low in the mid-20s. Cloudy tomorrow with a high in the mid-40s. Slight chance of rain and snow tomorrow night. Overnight low near freezing, 32 degrees. Slight chance of rain on Sunday. And then turning into possibly a mix of rain and snow, 37 for the high on Sunday. Monday, though, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-30s. Right now, 29 degrees at 407. From the Window World Studios at Westport, I'm Kent Martin, KTRS News.
Is your heating or air conditioning not running properly? Call the company that thousands of St. Louisans have relied on since 1950. Call my friends at Galmish & Sons, 314-993-1110, or Galmish & Sons.
Paul Harris Show, on the air everywhere, on the big 550 KTRS, and of course, worldwide via the free KTRS app on your smartphone. Welcome to the show, my penultimate show on a Friday afternoon. Penultimate is an English word meaning next to last. Josh is here with me in the studio. Hi, Josh. How are you today?
Oh, hi, Paul. You said Monday show.
I did?
You did.
This is why I'm getting fired.
Yeah.
I can't even keep the day straight.
It's Friday.
It's my, I've already done my ultimate Monday show. That was this last Monday. Now it's my penultimate Friday show. Thank you for the correction. Tim Weiland is in the traffic center. Hi, Tim. How are you today?
I'm here.
Good.
Hi, Paul. I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. As I was driving in today, I saw a St. Louis County truck spraying liquid salt on Highway 141, and I mainly went to check the forecast. There's no snow or ice in the forecast for the rest of today or tonight, is there? I think there's a possibility.
I don't know. I thought it was supposed to be tonight into tomorrow or vice versa. Then they keep pushing it back now. But they did the same thing. I took 270 to 44, and all the high, you know, I tried to stay off the right lane because they had just done that, but they've done the rest of the highway in 44, the same thing. It's already dried out white dust.
Maybe they know something that we don't, or maybe the contractor is getting double exposure today and tomorrow, and good for them if they are. Coming up on the show today, I'm going to talk with an author who's written a book about LBJ. It's called The Great Society, Inside Lyndon Johnson's White House. And if you're wondering what that could possibly have to do with our life in 2018, stick around. You'll find out how it's relatable today. He'll be on with me in about a half hour. And then next hour, I'll do the showbiz stuff. Max is off because his grandma died a couple of days ago. And so he has been taking some time off for the funeral and to spend time with the family. And we send our best wishes to him and all of them. My friend Kevin Brackett from Review STL is going to come in and fill in for Max again on today's show. We got a whole bunch of showbiz stuff to get to. And then, of course, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News. And, of course, I guess I got to start off with the memo. This is the big news of the day. You know what? I filed it away, and everything in my folder here is... It's just a generic N file. Let me see, newness. Here's a memo about a nooner. Mm. Oh, wait, that's a note from my wife. Never mind.
Ooh, lucky man.
Can't read that one. Here's the Noonan memo. Oh, this was sent from Brian Doyle Murray to...
Noonan
in Caddyshack.
Noonan.
Michael O'Keefe. That's not the memo we have for today. This is the Noogies memo. This is something my mom sent me when I was a kid to stop hitting my brother on the head. Okay, got that. I file everything. I'm like a hoarder. This is the nunchuck memo.
Yeah.
Don't bring nunchucks to work anymore. I stopped right as soon as the boss sent this memo. I stopped bringing nunchucks into work. I have this is the noon memo. This is an old memo from the British invasion when they hired Peter Noon to be the lead singer of Herman's Hermits.
Oh, cool.
That's what this memo is about. And this is the N-O... N-O-O-N-E, but it's not noon. It's the no one. Oh, it's a memo from me to the staff. It says, "Dear staff, I don't have anyone on the staff. You can all go home."
Mm.
Signed, Paul. Okay. That's all that's in the end folder. I don't know what all the buzz is today about the memos, but there you go. Got that covered. The Super Bowl is coming up Sunday in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I actually had the experience of going 25 years ago this week.
In the winter?
Yes, that's when the Super Bowl is played, Josh.
Oh.
In those days, it was played on the last weekend of January. Now it's played on the first weekend of February.
Wait, they had it 25 years ago in Minneapolis?
25 years ago this week.
Huh.
And I was there. At the time, I was doing mornings on a radio station in Washington, D.C. And that town feels the way about its football team, the way St. Louis feels about its baseball team. Just enormous, enormous amounts of fans. And from August to January every year, it's just Redskins fever there. Was there?
Vikings.
No, in Washington.
Oh.
I'm talking about when I was on the air in Washington.
Okay.
And those are the days when the Redskins were being coached by Joe Gibbs, and they had won the Super Bowl already, and were going for the third time. Not in a row, but in the time that he had been there, and they had the Hogs on the front line, and Mark Rippon was the quarterback, and Art Monk and Gary Clark and Ricky Sanders were the receivers, and Ernest Biner was the running back. I'd actually gone with the Redskins 4 years earlier to see them beat the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 22. And now they were going for the Super Bowl trophy, the Vince Lombardi trophy again. And so I took my show back on the road with my sports guy, whose name was Dave. The difference between those two Super Bowls for me was the first Super Bowl I went to with them was in San Diego, California.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know anything about San Diego, but it's never not nice in San Diego.
75 and sunny.
Right.
Right.
Beautiful. Great, great place to be. I went to the game in a T-shirt and shorts. In Minneapolis, it was more than 70 degrees, less than that. When we got off the plane, I will never forget this. You get out of off the plane, you walk up the jetway. In the jetway, you could feel, wow, it really feels cold here. But it's, you know, you're covered by the jetway. You get into the terminal, you walk out of the terminal to get a cab, and right then you realize you're in hell, or frozen hell anyway. We passed a thermometer on a bank building there. Temperature, zero.
Yeah.
We heard on the radio, wind chill, 40 below.
Whoa.
And we were there. We had flown out there on a Friday. I did my show Monday through Fridays in those days. And we were going to do extra shows on Saturday and Sunday from Minneapolis that weekend. So we flew out there on Friday night. And Dave and I thought, let's go to the Metrodome, which is where they used to play. Now it's a different dome because the old one was imploded. Fell in, actually. It's a whole other story. But we said, well, let's go there, and maybe we can do some interviews with some people who are milling around outside who are here excited about Super Bowl weekend. And so we went, and the cabbie said, you know, well, I'll go wherever you tell me to go. We said, all right, stop there on the way to the hotel. And so we get in front of the dome, and we said, keep the meter running. Hang on. We'll be right back. We get out of the cab. Instantly, we know that's a mistake.
Mm.
Because we can feel that 40-degree wind chill. We can feel the wind blowing. And we also realize there are no humans outside the dome.
Yeah.
Everybody else was a lot smarter than us. You don't go outside in that weather.
Let's go get a man on the street. Where are the men? Where are all the people?
There's no man, no woman, no anything on the street. So, of course, being a radio guy, I had my little portable, in those days, cassette recorder. It was before the digital era. And I took it out. And I said, Dave, let's just do like a little scene setter out here. And we could joke about this and use it on the show tomorrow. And so we did it. And then we got back in the cab. I don't think we were out of the cab 3 minutes.
Mm.
We get back in the cab, and I rewind the tape, and I listen to it. And all you hear is the wind just blowing right across the microphone. We ended up using that in telling the story, but that's what the day was like.
I thought for sure that all Super Bowls, until just recently, for a reason that I don't know who would explain it, but were always held in nice, warm weather climates.
Well, they were in Los Angeles and New Orleans and Miami and other places.
Arizona,
but you know when the Rams won their Super Bowl. Georgia against the Titans. That was in Atlanta, the Georgia Dome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Atlanta's a warm weather city, but anybody who remembers going to that game, you remember it was not nice weather outside.
Was it cold?
It was, well, it wasn't Minnesota cold.
Right.
But it was very chilly. It's winter. Right. Even Atlanta gets cold in the winter. But no other domes have hosted. I remember the, whatever that dome was called in Detroit that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, the
Pontiac Silverdome.
Silverdome.
Is that what it was called?
They just recently at the new MetLife in New York, or I guess New Jersey.
Yeah.
They just hosted a Super Bowl.
A few years ago they did.
Outdoors.
Ridiculous. I remember talking about how, you know, we had the dome when we had a team here. How come we never got a Super Bowl? And the answer was, oh, it's just too cold there. I was in one in Minnesota! And now they're back in Minnesota again.
There was a prop bet, and I'm going to have to go online and on my illegal online gambling site and see if it's still up. The opening kickoff temperature is lower than the points scored in the first quarter. Now, Paul,
yes.
The opening kickoff temperature is -1 degrees. I win.
Yeah.
No matter what.
That's correct.
I'm going to have to see if they still got that one up.
Look, you should look that one up. When we were there, we did the broadcast on Saturday and Sunday, and then we actually had gotten tickets to the game, which were pretty good. They were end zone seats about 12 or 13 rows up, which was that's a great perspective on football. If you can't sit up high when you go to a football game, sit in the end zones. You get that odd sensation during the kickoff of the place kicker kicks the ball, goes high in the air, you watch the ball, and as it comes down, you now have the same perspective as the guy who's catching the ball, and you realize here are 11 guys with an average weight of 250 pounds running at you at 20 miles an hour. No wonder they down the ball every time, if they can. No wonder most punts are fair catches.
Yeah.
But here is the odd thing about that. Because it was inside a dome, as you know, if you ever went to a cold weather game at our dome here, it's cold outside, but it's 72 degrees inside. Well, when it's zero outside with a wind chill of 40, you've got extra layers on. I was wearing 4 layers above my regular clothes. I had, you know, a sweater and a sweatshirt and a coat and an overcoat. I mean, just because it was so brutal outside. Well, once you get inside and you take that stuff off, and you put it on your chair, because there's no place else to put it. I'm not putting it under the chair. It's going to get soaked in beer. So I put it on the chair just like everybody else. You actually are sitting 3 feet above the chair.
Well, it makes those hard plastic seats a lot comfier, I would imagine.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. But we had a wonderful time there. And I remember, you know, again, being from a radio station in Washington, cheering on the Redskins and seeing... who was the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills? Kelly.
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly, yeah.
Mm.
Threw 4 interceptions and got sacked 4 times in that game.
That's funny because he's 0-4 in Super Bowls.
Yes, he is. And I remember after one of them, he was throwing from his own end zone and threw an interception. And he was so distraught after that, he actually didn't get up for about 20 seconds. The network had gone to commercial. And Dave and I were sitting there and said, this game's over. Look, he can't even get up off the turf to get back out there. So that was 25 years ago. That was the last time I ever got to go to a Super Bowl.
Hmm.
Either of you ever go?
No. Oh, no.
No.
Let me tell you. It's much better on TV.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm older now, so that definitely plays into it. But not being there, but being in your own home, where you don't have to peel off 4 layers of clothing and sit on top of it, and the bathroom is never going to be full of people, and the beverages are not going to be expensive, and you don't have to wade through a crowd to get there, so much better. Plus, you know, since 25 years ago, football has become even more of a television game. You get so much more of it sitting at home and watching it. Plus, when you're at the game, you can't see the ads, which in those days weren't nearly as big as they are this year.
It's half the reason I'm watching.
That's why a lot of women end up watching it.
Well, thank you.
No, my wife doesn't care about football. She won't watch any football games. She'll sit down with me on Sunday and watch the game, but just only because she wants to see the ads.
Okay. Better to watch it at home. But what if the Super Bowl's in San Diego again?
Watch it at home. Go to San Diego on vacation some other time.
Okay.
There you go. There you go.
Deal.
Yeah.
Save that money that you'd be spending for the Super Bowl on something.
There is a story that
I didn't have to pay for the tickets in those days for, you know, because I was doing it for the radio station, Tim. But if I did, I would never have gone. I'm not spending that much money on a football game. Forget about it. It's broadcast to my home for free.
There are some stories that if you go downtown St. Louis, you could probably find some really rough hotels.
Yes.
But there are some Minneapolis hotels that are charging like $500 a night.
That are rat holes.
Rat holes. Yeah exactly. And then one lady did the black light test and all that stuff.
Don't ever do the black light test. Yeah. If you're actually staying there, why would you want to know that?
I don't know. But they are just gouging.
I would just lie down and say, I don't really know, but I don't want to know.
Everything is probably just more expensive this week.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when we went, I'm trying to remember, we did not stay in downtown Minneapolis because we didn't know we were going to go we didn't make the arrangements until like a week ahead of time.
Mm.
And you can't get a ticket anywhere near a major event in this country a week ahead of time. You can't get a hotel room, you can't, rental car, all that sort of stuff. We ended up at some motel that was miles up the interstate. It would be the equivalent of you're going to a game in downtown St. Louis, and you end up you're staying in Clayton or Florissant or somewhere like that. And then, you got to cab it back and forth. The one thing that this motel, we got cheap rooms. We didn't care. We weren't going to be there that much. But the one good thing about it was an easy walk across the backyard of that motel to a sports bar.
Yeah.
And in those days, I drank. So,
cold walk, but
who cared?
Yeah,
it's a cold walk. It was, with all those Bud Light commercials right now, that's how I felt in those days. Yeah, it's going to be cold to walk across this backyard, but at the other end, there's going to be beer. I'm good.
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly, right.
That's exactly it. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more of the Paul Harris Friday Show in a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Hey, it's John Carney, and we're back to Ameristar Casino for our annual Carney Ball, benefiting the charities served by the Carney's Kids Foundation. 13 of the area's best restaurants, like Piccadilly in Manhattan, Cork and Barrel, Walkaway Waffles, Mission Taco, Layla, and Circa STL, all coming together to prepare an incredible meal. Follow that up with some great stand-up comedy from people like Dale Jones and a perennial favorite, Augie Smith.
Ever seen a school bus? The only seatbelt there goes around the 50-year-old parolee driving the damn thing. Oh, yeah. That dude's strapped in like he's going to lethal injection. Meanwhile, the kids are in the back flying around like lottery balls.
Throw in an amazing auction, and you have a night to remember. Saturday, February 24th. Get your Carnival tickets now at carneyskids.com. Presented by the Del Mar Gardens family and JBL Financial.
After a career in the Marine Corps, Don Moore got involved in local government because he was tired of Republicans surrendering to Democrats' overspending and tax increases.
I decided to run for state representative because our current representative, Mr. Charlie Meyer, didn't do what we sent him to Springfield to do. I didn't feel he was representing myself or my family and our conservative values.
Don Moore's running for state representative against a Republican who did the same thing in Springfield.
He ended up voting for a budget and crossed over to support Mike Madigan to raise our taxes by 32%. Those are not conservative values. We have Democrats do that for us. We don't need Republicans in office to vote for higher taxes.
Don Moore knows why he fights.
My wife and my daughters, they give me so much pleasure, and they make me want to fight for their futures.
For his family and yours. Isn't it time the Republican Party had more of Moore and less of Meyer?
I'm running for state representative. I like to bring my budgeting experience and conservative values to Springfield. I ask for your support.
Liberty Principles paid for this ad and is solely responsible for its contents, not authorized by any candidate or candidate committee.
Message and data rates may apply.
You don't follow the herd. You blaze your own trail. And you're as adventurous in the kitchen as you are in life. Whether it's paddleboard yoga or Peruvian steak, you're the first to try new things. So are we. We're Green Chef, the first USDA-certified organic meal kit delivery service. We offer delicious meal plans for 7 different lifestyles. Paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegetarian, vegan, carnivore, and omnivore. Want to be the first of your friends to try Green Chef? Discover our exclusive introductory deal by texting the keyword COOK to 543-543. We believe that cooking, just like life, should be all about experience and flavor. And by exploring dinner options with Green Chef, you'll try new recipes, techniques, and ingredients for bold new restaurant-level flavors. It's like enjoying a new cooking class, but in your own home. To experience this culinary adventure, text now and discover our exclusive introductory deal. Text COOK to 543-543. That's COOK to 543-543.
For life's aches and pains, choose Blue Emu Continuous Pain Relief Spray. It works fast, and it's easy to use. Designed to work odor-free in all those remote areas. It works here. It's odor-free here. It works here. Blue Emu Continuous Pain Relief Spray. Fast-acting, easy-to-use, odor-free pain relief for all those remote areas. Available at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and other fine retailers.
Finding a job isn't always easy for veterans. Many turn to construction and rely on Missouri's prevailing wage law. Prevailing wage makes sure our roads and bridges are built safely. Veterans have served our country, and they shouldn't have to fight fairness in wages. Please don't turn your back to Missouri's veterans. Call your state legislator and let them know our veterans are important, and so is Missouri's prevailing wage. This message is brought to you by Lesson.
Looking for ways to save with your Medicare plan? Walgreens is a preferred network pharmacy with many of the nation's plans, which could mean lower copays for you. So bring your prescriptions to a Walgreens pharmacy today to start saving. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. Walgreens participates as a preferred network pharmacy with Cigna HealthSpring and Humana. Walgreens participates with other plans. See walgreens.com/Medicare for details.
This would be the song to play in 2 weeks when I am already gone.
Oh, no. Eagles.
Eagles. I am Paul Harris, and I see what you did there. That's your Super Bowl thing?
I got a root for him. I don't want to see the Patriots win again.
I have, my wife has family in New England, so.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of locked in there. But not planning on putting any money on either side of the game. Speaking of which, I don't know anything about sports betting, but Josh and Tim, I have one very, very important piece of advice for you here. If you do make a habit of betting on UFC fighters, mm-hmm. never bet on the one without tattoos.
Ah.
I came across it the other night on cable, and there was this guy who was as pale as could be, who had no tattoos, and he's up against another guy who looks like he's gone through the prison tattoo regimen, yeah. You know, with the misspelled words and the lines that aren't quite straight and all that sort
and
of stuff.
Eyeballs and, yeah. And the spider webs.
That guy's going to kill you. he just has that look. He's the kind of guy who's so scary, he crosses the street to avoid himself.
Yeah. When he sees a mirror.
So do not bet on the guy who does not have any tattoos. This is the Big 550 KTRS, one of the few stations in town still having its original owners.
Mm.
Big deal went down this week. It was announced that four FM radio stations in town are going to be sold. Emmis Communications is getting out of St. Louis. Two of their stations are being sold to a company called Hubbard, which is already in town, and another two to Entercom, which recently bought CBS. And Tim and I, as veterans of this industry, know one thing that happens when this happens. Everyone at those radio stations should be working on their resumes. Did we lose?
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, I find it kind of interesting because. You guys got me?
Yeah, you know what? We're having a little technical difficulty here. We're going to have to.
Hello?
Yeah. Josh is going to have to. I have to go in the other room and reconnect the modem to reconnect to him. Can you do that from that control board you have in front of you there?
No, I'm going to have to
get up. You have to do it down the hall?
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say was that in this business, as in many other businesses, consolidation means people get fired. I mean, if you are a company that owns three radio stations in town and then you take on two more, Well, those other two radio stations used to be part of another group, and they had their own chief engineer. They had their own human resources. This is true in any business. All the people behind the scenes who were doing whatever their jobs were, those jobs are now essentially going to be taken over by the people who are doing it at the buyer, the station that is now consolidating them under their own roof. And even if they're not under the same roof, companies that take on more employees usually don't need all the people behind the scenes, particularly in the cubicle jobs. So all of those people who work there, not necessarily the people on the air, although that could also become a problem because of contracts and money and all that stuff, but all of those people who work behind the scenes, I feel sorry for them because they are sweating it right now. I've gone through a couple of these, and anybody in any business should know that if you're ever bought out by another company, and the new company's representatives come through and say, look, we wouldn't have bought this place if it weren't for all the great people who work here. As soon as you hear that sentence, immediately go to your computer and start working on your resume. Immediately start contacting whoever you can in your business to see if you can line up another job. Because when they say, we only bought this place because of the people who work here, they don't mean we intend to keep everybody here. We see you as disposable. And that's one of the sad things that's going to happen here. So there are some good people who work at some of these radio stations. They may be competitors. I've never viewed them as such. But a lot of them, especially the behind-the-scenes people, the people whose names you, the public, have never known and will never know, they're the ones who, unfortunately, are going to discover that their necks are on the chopping block here as consolidation sweeps through St. Louis radio yet again, but not here at the Big 550 KTRS. I'll take a break and I'll introduce you to an author named Joshua Zeitz, who's written a book called Building the Gray Society Inside Lyndon Johnson's White House. That's as the Paul Harris Show continues right after this on the Big 550 KTRS.
All right. Got to call this one in here until we get things worked out here. You've got a five-vehicle accident. Now, first of all, here it's on eastbound Highway 270 at 367, blocking the left lane. Now, the problem was you had a lot of traffic backed up because of the road work that was going on between Lilac and Riverview. That's been all picked up and it's open, but now this accident happens, and EMS is not even with it yet, and you're already backing up past Old Halls Ferry. This traffic, second of all, you've got eastbound Highway 4064 running pretty slow now. That is from Compton to the Poplar Street Bridge. Southbound 270 has heavier volume between Olive down through Manchester. And if you are on northbound 170, things are slow now from 70 up through Airport Road. This traffic report is brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. A bad cold and flu season is upon us. The difference between a cold and the flu is the flu brings a fever. Be prepared with a thermometer you can trust. The Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, backed by more than 70 clinical studies. That's a look at traffic. I'm Tim Weiland from the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center.
Now at CC's, you can order your own personal pizza. There's thousands of ways to customize it your way, included with your buffet. Just five and change at CC's. Dine in only. Prices may vary. Restrictions apply.
A special thanks to everyone who has called Bowen Dental Care for all of your dental needs. Just got word that many people are using Dr. Velvet Hands as their primary dentist. Now, lots of people are talking about dental implants and implant dentures, and you have a lot of options out there, especially corporate dentists that charge you a fortune and send you to different dentists. Well, at Bowen Dental Care, he charges a fraction of that, and all the work is done at his world headquarters on Dunn Road in Florissant, and all the work is done by him, Dr. Velvet Hands. Whether it's dental implants, implant dentures, if you need a first opinion or a second opinion, I would recommend Dr. Bowen. But of course, teeth whitening, teeth cleaning, caps, root canals, whatever it may be, if you take care of your teeth, Dr. Bowen will take care of you. B-O-A-I-N, Bowen Dental Care in Florissant on Dunn Road. And you can certainly call for an appointment, 314-921-3500 or BowenDentalCare.com.
All right, let's talk refinancing. And, of course, you know I'm now going to talk about Stuart Rosenblum and Stuart's American Mortgage Corp. You can either listen to me talk about this or just pick up the phone now, because this was a reminder for you to call 314-324-4440. Why do it now? Well, interest rates are on the verge of going higher, and I don't want you to be the one to say, if I'd have just called the the last time Carney was talking about this. Hopefully this will be the last time. Call now and refinance. Lower your monthly payments. Get some cash back out of your house. Shorten the term of your loan. So many different advantages, but it all starts with a phone call from you to Stuart at no cost. The Bega loan has zero closing costs. 314-324-4440 or online at stuartsamc.com.
American Mortgage Corporation, number 226715. NMLS, number 2675679.
How would you and a friend like to win tickets to see the Repertory Theater production of The Humans for free on opening night, Friday, February 9th? It's the story of the Blake family gathering for Thanksgiving. Everyone's trying to make the best of it, but life's little indignities are piling up. To win, register at KTRS.com or text the rep to 84126. And it could be you and a friend in two premium seats to see the Repertory Theater's production of The Humans, the winner of four 2016 Tony Awards from the Big 550 KTRS.
Get that perfect look for your Valentine's dream date at New Season Spa and Salon. Explosively creative hair design, skincare, waxing, massage, body treatments, nails, spa packages, and yes, men's services too. New Seasons has microblading for eyebrows and Nova Lash extensions at special Valentine's pricing. There's no excuse for missing that perfect look for Valentine's at New Seasons in Ronnie's Plaza. Online at newseasonspa.com. Open Sundays 12 to 6.
I'm Anthony Pulis, new head coach of St. Louis FC. We will kick off our fourth season in March and invite you to join us at the Worldwide Technology Soccer Park for all the exciting action of the 2018 season. St. Louis FC games create an authentic, professional soccer experience you won't want to miss.
Season tickets are available now. Or bring your group to a game and enjoy one of the many hospitality areas available at the stadium. There are plenty of ways to enjoy the St. Louis FC experience. To get your tickets, visit stlouisfc.com.
You need someone you can trust when it comes to buying jewelry? Well, I've got them. Jimmy and Mike Lordo from Lordo's Diamonds. They've been doing this a long time. Don't go to a big box store. Don't go online. And please don't buy your jewelry from somebody who buys in bulk. Classy, elegant, traditional. Lordo's Diamonds in the heart of Ladue. Do you know where Truffles is? Right in that shopping center. Lordo's Diamonds in the heart of Ladue. For all of your jewelry, LordoDiamonds.com.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. You can follow me online on my website, harrisonline.com, or on Facebook, where I take all friends. Every friend request gets accepted. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at Paul Harris Show. My guest today is an author by the name of Joshua Zeitz, who has written a very interesting book called Building the Great Society, Inside Lyndon Johnson's White House. And you might think, well, why are we talking about Lyndon Johnson here in 2018? Well, we've seen a lot of Lyndon Johnson movies in the last few years. Woody Harrelson had horrible makeup in Rob Reiner's movie LBJ a couple of years ago. Bryan Cranston won all sorts of awards for his stage show and then his HBO show All the Way, in which he played the 36th president. John Carroll Lynch played LBJ in a movie called Jackie, in which Natalie Portman played Jackie Kennedy. Liev Schreiber played LBJ in The Butler. Tom Wilkinson in Selma. Those are all in, I think, just the last 5 years or so. And there's been a whole resurgence of interest in Lyndon Baines Johnson, particularly in comparison to the political situation we find ourselves in now. So it's an interesting time to be talking about this president and a good time to bring in an author who's written a beautiful book about him. Joshua Zeitz, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
You say in the book that the legacy that is most at risk under our current president is not that of the previous president, Barack Obama, but of LBJ. Why?
Well, if you look at the slate of programs that fall under the sort of the header of the Great Society, when it's Medicare and Medicaid, federal aid to public education, federal aid to colleges, civil rights and voting rights, nutritional assistance for children and families that are struggling. All of these programs are currently under assault. The Republican Party has, for many years at least, been rhetorically dedicated to the proposition that the Great Society should be dismantled. This is the first time in decades that they've enjoyed the presidency, both houses of Congress, and not just both houses of Congress, but a Republican leadership that is deeply ideologically committed to not only dismantling the components of the Great Society that were dedicated to alleviating poverty for those who lived in it, but also to dismantling key components of civil rights legislation that was otherwise for years considered unassailable.
Yeah. How does that compare to the Congress that LBJ had to deal with?
It's a much different situation, you know, partly because in LBJ's days, the Republicans and Democrats were not as ideologically polarized. You had conservative Democrats, most of them from the South, and you also had a decent minority of the House and Senate Republican caucuses comprised of liberal or moderate Republicans, mostly from the North and Midwest. But Johnson was able to enact such an enormous slate of programs, in part because after 1964, he enjoyed supermajorities in the House and Senate, a courtesy of his landslide victory over Barry Goldwater in 1964. So that having been said, if you look at some of the criticisms of Congress in 1963 on the eve of Kennedy's death, it's almost like you're reading from today's newspapers. I mean, on the eve of Kennedy's death, social welfare legislation, health care legislation, education bills, civil rights legislation, it was all stalled in Congress. They failed to pass ordinary course of business appropriations bills, and they were governing by continuing resolution, which is normal today, but back then was sort of stunning. So it took Kennedy's death and Johnson's leadership to really create a political moment when things could get done.
And the death of JFK in November of 1963 kind of gave LBJ, as he took over as president, some political capital, because the mood of the country was one of bereavement for several months. I mean, up until the Beatles came in February, but even into the election year of 1964, he still had am I right that he had the support of a lot of the country?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, most of those movies that you mentioned, and I'd forgotten there are so many of them. You know, when they portray Johnson, the sort of the magical moments, and it's usually one of two, or when he signs the Civil Rights Act or he signs the Voting Rights Act. You know, he was seen as a master legislator, and that's still how we remember him. But it's important to recall that he was successful at getting these bills through Congress for two fundamental reasons. One, as you point out, he enjoyed a groundswell of goodwill following Kennedy's assassination. Americans were eager to get behind their new president. And then he won this landslide victory that delivered him effectively supermajorities in each House of Congress. Mm-hmm. But what I tried to do in the book was not retell that story, because it's been told a million times over, but rather tell the story about what happened the day after he signed all of these bills into effect, whether it was the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts, or Medicare and Medicaid Act, or the Aid to Education Act, and to look at how this talented group of White House aides he had assembled around him were able to build these programs and make them function and make them sustainable, all in the course of about 4.5 years, while also desegregating a third of the country and while also getting mired in Vietnam. That's really quite an extraordinary story.
Yeah, I want to come back to the personnel and I want to come back to Vietnam, but I've got to ask you, since you mentioned it, LBJ is responsible for the Democratic Party essentially losing the South, isn't he?
He is, and he knew it. I mean, one of the remarkable things about Johnson was that he was the Southern Democrat who had been a real temporizer and as conservative as anybody else from his region on race matters throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But he was committed to desegregation and committed to civil rights in his heart. As a president, you know, he made sure that civil rights was deeply embedded in the Great Society. So it's not just that he enforced the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, which he did. And he famously said to Bill Moyers, who was then his young 29-year-old White House aide, that he said after he signed the Civil Rights Act into law, "I've lost the South for a generation." But he knowingly did it. He understood that he had so much political capital, and he was going to have to spend it and draw it down, and that's what it was for. Early in his presidency, as he was made the decision to commit to, you know, to putting the full weight of his office behind getting the Civil Rights Act passed, one of his aides, you know, said, "Well, why do you want to, you know, this is a hopeless cause, you know, you're gonna lose all this goodwill overnight." And he said, "What the hell is the presidency for?" He understood that you had capital and you spent it. And so you look at like the way in which they implemented Medicare, for instance, and they stood the program up within 11 months. They initially, you know, what they did is they went to hospitals and nursing homes, and I say they, I mean the administration that was being coordinated from the basement of the West Wing, went to 10,000 plus hospitals throughout the South and said, you're eligible for Medicare money next year in 66, but only if you desegregate ward by ward, floor by floor, room by room. You have to hire black nurses and doctors. You have to post notices in newspapers letting African American and white residents of the town know that the hospital is now desegregated. You know, they used federal dollars as a carrot and a stick in order to desegregate schools, hospitals, nursing homes. And they did it knowing that they were likely going to flip the South to the Republican Party for years to come, but LBJ realized that he had a moment, he had capital, and he was willing to spend it.
In pushing through Medicare and Medicaid, did he ever want single payer health care?
No, in fact, that he was. In fact, it's interesting. They ultimately did the bill signing in Independence, Missouri, with you know Harry Truman's hometown, and they did it with Truman, who was then quite elderly. Truman had been a proponent of single payer health care, and Johnson's aides actually suggested that he not do the bill signing there because they were afraid that conservative Republicans, the business lobby, and the American Medical Association, which had fought tooth and nail against Medicare, would somehow use the bill signing to portray it as a single-payer kind of government healthcare takeover. In fact, this was an era when increasing numbers of Americans in the 20 years after World War II enjoyed access to employer-based provided health care. And so the act was really intended to provide health care to two groups that had been left behind, those who were unemployed and who didn't have access to health care. And originally Medicaid was for the poorest of the poor and really single mothers as well who weren't in the workforce. And Medicare was obviously designed for the elderly, people who by definition were probably not working anymore. But, you know, that's one of the points I try to draw out in the book. The Great Society was framed in an era of tremendous economic prosperity, a growing economy, low inflation, when millions of Americans, both working class and middle class, had good jobs that paid more than a living wage, and defined benefits, pensions, and employer-based health care. It didn't anticipate a world in which those things receded, in which the unionized manufacturing jobs were replaced by low-wage service jobs that didn't provide pensions or health care. And so we find ourselves today under strain in a way that I think the framers of the Great Society didn't anticipate. So you ask, did they support it at the time? No. I think, however, having spent a lot of time reading through their papers and their memoirs, their oral histories, I think if you transported them magically to today, they probably would.
Mm. Lately, there's also been a lot of talk about Richard Nixon for what I think are fairly obvious reasons. But when people think about Richard Nixon, they think about two things, Watergate and the Vietnam War. He gets an enormous amount of blame for the Vietnam War. But doesn't that blame really fall better at the feet of Lyndon Baines Johnson? After all, he was president from November of 1963 to January of 1969, and that's when the big buildups were. So why don't we put the blame for Vietnam more on him, and what does that do to his legacy?
Sure. Well, I think he does suffer for it. While it is true that half of the U.S. service deaths in Vietnam occurred under Nixon's watch, it was Johnson who escalated it. It was Johnson who bequeathed that war to Nixon. But I think it has historically damaged his reputation and his legacy. He's seen the historian Robert Dallek wrote a wonderful two-volume biography of Johnson years ago. And the second volume about his presidency is entitled Flawed Giant, and the flaw is in part personal, but largely about Vietnam. And part of, you know, the reason that I think we're going through a reappraisal period right now of Johnson is that for many decades, he had been seen as a failed president who accomplished some important things, but ultimately whose reputation was hopelessly damaged by the Vietnam War. And that's not a focus of my book per se, the Vietnam War, but I do have to look at the ways in which his dissemblance on how deeply he had involved the country in the war and on how much it cost and how we were going to pay for it, the dissemblance that came from the White House on that damaged his credibility. It fractured his coalition, led to the end of his presidency. He might well have otherwise run for and won the presidency again in 68, and it put tremendous strain on his ability to grow the Great Society program. So it is an unfortunate and but yet really fascinating paradox about him.
You talked before about his political capital after Kennedy's assassination and his landslide victory in 1964. Did the public support for him and for the concept of big government continue throughout his presidency, or did the feelings of the public start turning a little bit?
It turned around 66, 67, and largely because of Vietnam, but also because of a lot of other upheavals that were in some respects related to Vietnam and others not. This was an era of campus unrest, increasingly violent urban riots and uprisings. There was a lot of generational tension that he could not possibly have anticipated. It happened everywhere around the Western world and was related to the sort of maturation of the first crop of baby boomers. There was inflation that owed in large part to borrowing and wartime spending. So it all came together as a perfect storm. And by 68, he was extraordinarily controversial. But, from 63 to 65, he did enjoy a wellspring of support. And it stretched across, ideology. It stretched across regions. So he had a moment, and he did use it well.
There's also a point in his presidency where he took to the megaphone, the bully pulpit of the presidency, to declare a war on poverty, a three-word phrase that I don't think had been heard in American history before that. It was Johnson who declared that. How'd that work out?
Well, I mean, the war on poverty, which he declared in his first State of the Union address in January of 64, if you look at the component programs, it's everything from Head Start, which remains a vital and very popular program, to you could argue Medicaid was part of it. The idea was that in a growing economy where you could count on, they thought that they had mastered the sort of like levers that would give you boundless economic growth at 5-6% a year with low inflation, that as Walter Lippmann, the octogenarian dean of American journalism, wrote in 1964, whereas in the 1930s, the answer to solving poverty would have been, well, in a sick capitalist, with capitalism being so fundamentally flawed and sick, you have to divide the pie into smaller pieces in order to make sure everybody gets a piece and enough to eat. Today, we can grow the pie at 5-6%. And so what we have to do is provide qualitative assistance to people in the form of job training, education, access to health care so they'd be healthy enough to work, access to food if they were living in food insecurity. And if you gave them these qualitative tools, they'd be able to capture their fair share of a forever growing economy. That's what a lot of those measures were intended to do. Now, as I said earlier, we're living in a very different world, and so it's unclear whether these qualitative measures can help people capture opportunity that for many people in many communities doesn't exist anymore. I mean, that having been said, 130 million people today rely on Medicare and Medicaid. If you took it away, that would be devastating. 30 million children today rely on reduced or free school lunches and breakfasts. That's a component of LBJ's war on poverty. If you took that away, it would be a disaster. So by some measures, these programs have reduced the poverty rate by about 26%. So he didn't eliminate poverty. He didn't win the war, but he certainly made a pretty big dent in it.
Yeah, you make a great argument for it. What do you know now about LBJ that you didn't know when you started researching this book?
I knew he was a complicated character coming in, but I don't think I had a true appreciation for the sort of depth of his intellect. I mean, he could be crass and crude, vulgar, but he was a public policy devotee. He read 300,000 words worth of public policy memoranda that his staff prepared for him and the agencies prepared for him every week, and he was deeply immersed in the minutiae of public policy. When they were desegregating schools after the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 64 and the Aid to Education Act in 65, he would walk in and out of his Joe Califano, his domestic policy czar's office, time and again and ask about desegregation targets in specific school districts, you know, in Alabama or Mississippi. He was really detail-oriented. It's a stunning contrast with the current president.
Which of those guys who I mentioned who played LBJ at the beginning of our interview did you think did the best job?
I actually thought Woody Harrelson was masterful.
You did?
Fantastic. Yeah, I think Bryan Cranston was excellent as well. But I was really impressed by Woody Harrelson, and I chose him instead because I think the movie didn't get enough credit. I thought it was really well done.
Even in that makeup?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's makeup. I can look beyond that. I thought, you know, that didn't bother me as much because I really thought that he had captured the sort of the personality and the spirit of it so much that I was sort of convinced. But both that and the All the Way film were spectacular.
The book is called Building the Great Society, Inside Lyndon Johnson's White House. It was published just this week by Viking Press. And here's the guy who wrote it, Joshua Zeitz. Nice work on the book, and thanks for your time today.
Thanks ever so much. It was great talking.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Meep, meep.
All right. Well, the accident that was on eastbound Highway 270 at 367 has moved out of the left lane to the right shoulder, but we do have some really, really heavy traffic now. We're going to start actually on eastbound Highway 270 from McDonald through Lindbergh, but then, boy, at 170, you're going to hit slow to stop and go all the way out through 367. That was combined with all the construction that was going on at Lilac. Now, that's all been picked up, so it's just one long jam. We have southbound Highway 170. That's stacked up now from Del Mar down through Highway 40. We've got an accident eastbound Forest Park Parkway at Big Bend that's causing some backups there with lane blockage. Westbound 4064 Heavy Kings Highway. That goes all the way through McCausland. You're heavy again from Clayton Warson through Ballas. Southbound 270 is slow to stop and go south of Page down through Ladue and then from Highway 40 down through Doherty Ferry. And it looks like eastbound southbound 55. You're running pretty slow from north of Highway Z to south of Highway Z. There may have been an earlier incident that's been cleared. This traffic report brought to you by Pringles. When you stack up different flavors of Pringles, you create amazing new flavors. Stack barbecue, ranch, and pizza Pringles for the barbecue ranch pizza stack. Genius. Stack different flavors, create endless new ones with Pringles. That's a look at traffic. Tim Weiland from the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center.
Suburban Leisure Center presents a hysterical...
Historical!
Sorry, historical moment. At the dawn of time, humans took a giant leap forward when cavemen discovered combustion.
Ooh, ooh, what is this? I think I will call it fire. That's it, fire.
Since then came campfires, pot-bellied stoves, then central heat. But we've never lost the warm feelings that flames in a fireplace can bring.
Sweetie, let's build a fire and snuggle.
But wood fires are messy, with ashes to clean up.
You're making a mess.
And you can't turn it off when you want to. You need gas logs from Suburban Leisure Center.
Wish we had gas logs.
They look like real wood, but unlike real wood, you don't have to constantly buy more, and they don't leave a mess.
Wish we had gas logs.
Take the hint and head to Suburban Leisure Center for tremendous savings on gas logs. This hysterical...
It's historical, idiot!
Sorry. Historical moment was brought to you by Suburban Leisure Center on Olive, just a mile west of 141. Online at suburbanleisurecenter.com.
Cheers! It's Galentine's Day at Pichoni Pastry. On Tuesday, February 13th, gather your ladies for the perfect girls' night out, complete with themed desserts like the mouth-watering red velvet and wine-infused cannoli and chocolate-covered strawberry cassata cake. And as a special treat for one night only, your purchase comes with a complimentary glass of champagne. So leave the men at home and join Pichoni Pastry for a special Galentine's Day event from 5 to 9 p.m. on February 13th at the corner of Del Mar and Skinker in the historic Delmar Loop.
Hi, this is Jeff Lapidus, the retirement coach. If you want to make smart choices about your retirement planning, listen to my show, Straight Talk on Retirement, this Saturday at 10 a.m. here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Now at CC's, you can order your own personal pizza. There's thousands of ways to customize it your way, included with your buffet. Just five and change at CC's. Dine in only. Prices may vary.